I mean, I look back at my life and I look back upon this year and I've accomplished a lot. You know, people ask me, what's on your bucket list? And I go, there's really nothing on my bucket list. But the reality is everyone checks out and the family continues on. I mean, that's what family's about. Regardless of having cancer or not, or just old age, you know, that's just part of life. And so you just have to kind of keep putting things in perspective. I mean, I've lost all my immediate family. I mean, they've all passed away. So I understand what death is about. You know, I've been there when people have died. So I understand what that transition is like.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chino y Chicano. This is it's a difficult episode because I've lost my buddy. My best friend, my podcast partner, loyal friend, really, guy that was just like a brother to me, Matt Chan, has passed away. I'm recording on Easter Sunday, March 30th. He passed yesterday, March 29th, in the afternoon, about 4:37 p.m. I did have a chance to briefly talk to Matt in the morning. He was struggling, but his son called me and said Matt wanted to talk, and so we had a brief conversation. We did have a conversation on Thursday night, and during that time we were able to just tell each other how much our friendship meant to one another. I was able to tell him how much he meant to me. When I say Matt was like a brother, I really mean that, because he was a little bit older than me, but I was kind of like that little brother. He had to always make sure that he was doing what he should be doing. And Matt, being Matt, in his way, he just kind of did it. that's what, and his advice was always good. So I was always appreciative of that. He helped me so much. Matt had been struggling lately with his cancer. It's been almost 2 years since he had received the diagnosis of kidney cancer. Of course, with cancer, the journey is always up and down, and that was surely the case for Matt. We thought, didn't look good in the beginning, but then we thought, well, things might work out okay. He went through immunotherapy, and that seemed to help as far as he'd had a tumor on his right kidney, and we were shrinking the tumor. But gradually, things just started slipping away and not working well, and it just got tough. Eventually, what happened, Matt was in the hospital recently. They're going to remove his gallbladder, and then found out that he had some lesions there and they weren't able to do it. And then last Tuesday, he sent me a text. I was in Boston at a conference, and he said that the doctors had told him he had only weeks, maybe a month. So it was quite shocking that on Saturday afternoon that he passed. He was just starting hospice care. And so it just happened so quickly. I guess in a way, maybe that's a good thing, because he's not suffering anymore. And he had been in discomfort, and obviously things were not going well. So having anything that would have been protracted would have been difficult. But it's been shocking to have him pass so quickly. Matt and I have been friends for 45 years. We met at King Television. I was a producer. He had come in to be a producer for public affairs, and he made his mark. He was only there a year, but Matt was so talented. He was also brash, bold. I think the white supervisors that he had were wondering, who is this Asian guy who thinks he knows everything? Well, I mean, what ended up happening is that Matt was so good when it came to production skills and technology that the ones that were wondering if he was out of his lane suddenly realized that, hey, this guy knows his stuff and we should keep him around, or he should work on my team. Anyway, Matt eventually went to San Francisco. He got recruited away to take a job there on a nightly magazine show, and he became a great editor, then a producer. Then he eventually went on to work at other stations in the California area, Northern California and Bay Area, and also in Sacramento. He came back to Seattle as part of what was Belo, and they had at one time owned Cairo, and Matt was able to, they had a production company. Matt was able to buy that company through his, as he was kind of exiting Belo. And that turned into what a company that he called Screaming Flea Productions. Don't know where the title came from, but Matt created that, and they had a very successful run of creating cable episodes. And of course, the big hit of his company was a show called Hoarders, which you might be aware of now. It's still on the air on cable television. Matt was on a trip to Japan. He happened to turn on morning news show, saw a story about a guy that was a hoarder. And then in Japan, this was like a real big deal.
And it was a sort of a Good Morning America show. And they were looking at some house that was just a mess in a neighborhood. And so the city came and cleaned it up. There were rats, rotting food, everything. And it was just, it was great television. So I came back and I started researching it. And I said, wow, there's this disorder called hoarding. And I started looking into it. And I go, damn, there's houses like that everywhere. So I pitched it to A&E. And they said, oh, this is a good idea, but can you make it a lifestyle show? And I go, what do you mean a lifestyle show? Well, where you would clean their house up and do a reveal before and after. And I said, that's not really what the show's about. There's a psychological dimension. And they said, oh, well, this is what we want. So they gave me money to do the pilot. I did the pilot, and it was brutal because we did a story. It was about a nurse who had died in her apartment, and she had like 14 pets of different sorts. And she died, and she was dead for like, 4 weeks or something. Ugh. And they finally got into the apartment, and all the animals had left her body alone, but they started eating each other. Oh. So they had to go into this thing and clean it up. They brought in her sister to identify the body, who hadn't seen her in 6 years. And then we do a cleanup and this whole thing. And they go, yeah, the show is pretty compelling, but it doesn't work as a lifestyle show. And I go, I know, I told you. So then the Biography Network stepped in, which was I guess A&E's the parent network. Mm-hmm. And so it's a secondary network. And the guy goes, I like your idea. He goes, I'll give you the money to do the pilot the way you want to do it. So we redid the pilot, and it was sort of much like how Hoarders is today. They ran it in the middle of the night, and it did the biggest number they've ever had. Then they didn't believe it. So they ran it again without promotion. It popped another number, and then A&E goes, we want the show. So I said, you know, the contract says it's double the price if you take it. And they go, I know, I know. And so it went on the air, and within 3 weeks, we were on Oprah because it trended so heavily and became a deal. And now the term hoarders is like a term people use. Oh, he's a hoarder.
Right.
So
it's in the dictionary.
Yeah. I know. So what better kind of compliment could you have? And then there are obviously the knockoffs after it. But it's still on the air.
Matt retired at the age of 60, and at that time, I think he really wanted to dedicate his time to his family and his grandkids, and he still kind of kept his hand in the business. We remained friends, you know. Even though Matt had, moved to California, I think in many ways our friendship just got stronger because he stayed in touch, and we were there for each other for big events like weddings, and he came to mine. I went to his. We stayed in touch through the years. We just became even stronger friends when he would come back to town. It was great when he came back to Seattle because we were able to spend time together more And then, of course, in our later years, we even got closer. I actually got him on the board at KCTS, public television station where I worked at. And I think he really enjoyed doing that, probably frustrated at times because Matt was somebody that wanted things done much more quickly. And public television kind of moves at a snail's pace. Anyway, so Matt, one of the things that he started doing is he's got very involved in the Chinatown International District community. And he really got involved in efforts to teach young people about how to create television and storytelling and production. He taught at the University of Washington. Then he got really involved in issues in the Chinatown international community. And I think the one that really stood out is that you may recall about, I don't know, a year or so ago, maybe a little bit longer, that the King County tried to expand the homeless shelter near the international district, the CID. And Matt was part of the group that fought it.
Because the story was not about us versus the unhoused. My God, you know, who doesn't have empathy for the unhoused?
Right.
And the shelter that we were pushing against was a good shelter. The real question was how underrepresented communities just don't have a voice. I mean, this past election tells you that. I mean, there's not enough votes in the Chinatown International District to make a difference. That's why it continues to be a problematic spot, you know, I mean, which a lot of people refer to as a shithole, you know. And because they don't have a voice, things happen to them. I mean, one of the things that I look back on, and I started thinking about the recent history of the neighborhood. And, you know, one of the most monumental things that happened was putting in the Navigation Center, which created the situation at 12th and Jackson. And when you think about that, you think about what Little Saigon was, and it was vibrant.
Right.
I mean, they had shops there. People would dine there, and it slowly went away. And the thing was, it's because it was slow that people didn't recognize what was happening. You just kind of look at it today, and you go, like, my God, what is going on there? But it wasn't always like that. So you see that in the long term of history, sort of recent history, that when decisions are made that directly impact a community and the community has no voice, the long-term effects are devastating. And so I think every community needs to be heard. I mean, that's, you know, so it's not about the unhoused. It's really about being heard, because there is no reason on earth that the Chinatown International District needs to hold the largest number of shelters in the city. There's no reason for that.
Right.
Other than, oh, we like to centralize services. But at what cost? At what cost? Because you have now destroyed a thriving community that was essential to the Vietnamese community for a period of time. Right. Now, that community's moved on, but that doesn't mean that area is less important.
Matt took that on, that issue, along with others. His wife Gee got involved. They got the community to react. They got the seniors to come out and to march and protest, go to the city council. But he helped create the strategy for all of that. And the interesting thing is that he really used his storytelling skills and how they would approach fighting back. And it worked. And so Matt became a bit of a force in the CID. Because he knew how to organize, he knew how to communicate, he knew how to take storytelling skills and apply that to what needed to be done to tell the story, to look at the history. We used the podcast, Chino Chicano, to talk about it as well. Real success story there. Seattle Magazine honored him as one of the people of influence, which I know meant a lot to him.
I mean, it's one of those things that just came out of the blue. But, you know, when you look at kind of the stuff that I've done, that's, I mean, it was a good recognition, because I do stuff under the radar. I don't really, you know me, I just like do what I do because it interests me. And when something interests me and I try to learn it, it does take my mind off what's happening to me.
There's there's nothing more universally Asian than a steaming bowl of rice.
Matt used his storytelling skills to help community organizations with their fundraising. He also produced videos for candidates of color, such as State Senator Joe Wynn, King County Council Member Girmay Zahalai, Seattle City Council Member Tanya Wu, as well as Port of Seattle Commissioners Sam Cho, Toshiko Hasegawa, and Hamdi Mohammed.
Matt and I started doing this podcast, and we did a test run in December 2020, then started on it full time in 2021. And we used to do these Zoom calls with a couple of other buddies, Eugene Tagawa and James Burns. Both of them worked with us at King. And during COVID, we would do Friday afternoon Zoom sessions just to talk and make sure that we were all alive and that we weren't going crazy and, you know, pandemic isolation. And it was during that time that, you know, Matt said, hey, we should do a podcast. And so one night I came up with this idea of like, hey, let's call it Chino Chicano. I called him and said, what do you think? He said, well, let's try it. And then we decided to do a pilot. And then from there we thought, okay, well, let's just do this thing. So we did. And our focus was really on communities of color, and the issues that they have, and also trying to talk in a way that's not code switching, like you might do if you're a person of color in a among a, you know, white business or something like that, or just to be ourselves in our community. So that's what our goal was. And Matt had lots of great ideas. We went at it. And we had never really worked together, even though we were friends, but we had done some work for El Centro de la Raza, some stories for them for their gala. And he did the editing because he was so good at that. He did the shooting and editing, and I did the writing and the narrating. And we found out that we worked really well together. We just worked well together. So that was a wonderful thing to have experience. His cancer journey was one that, you know, came out of the blue. And I think we were hopeful that things would work out. But gradually things did not. It was hard. It's been hard. It was hard to see him hurt. It was hard to see him in pain. It was hard to see him struggle. And in the past month or so, to see him not be able to catch a break. Last time we talked, he said to me that, I'm in God's hands now. And I said to him, well, you know, you'd better be nice to God because you're a handful. And so I hope he behaves somewhat in heaven. I'm sure he will. Well, maybe not. Who knows? You know, all of this has hit me hard, too. You know, that mortality thing. 70 years old and lose my best friend. And you just start thinking about things and also thinking about what's important, which I probably should have thought of about a long time ago. But what's important is having family, having those valued relationships with people, friendships. I was very fortunate that, you know, to have this strong friendship with Matt right to the end. And just means a lot to me. And I've had my time to cry, and I'm sure I'll cry more. I'm going to miss him so much. I'm going to miss calling him and just, how you doing? Calling him and telling him, you know, what's in my life and what I'm struggling with, or what's good, what I'm doing, or what could we do next on the podcast, and what should we do? And just, I'm going to miss my buddy. I'm going to miss my buddy. Anyway, I just wanted to record this because I felt, I guess, a need to just talk about Matt. And I just feel so lucky that to have that relationship with him, for him to be in my life. And I'm just really fortunate. and to Guy and his daughter Althea, and to Max, his son, and his grandkids, Key and Sage, my condolences. He loved you guys. He loved you a lot. And, you know, his grandkids were like the light of his life. He was a proud grandpa. And he loved kids. He really liked kids a lot. And he just was just so proud of his grandchildren. And to his family, just know that if you need anything, I'm here. All you got to do is call, and I'll be there for you. And Matt, cancer may have taken you from this life, but, you know, thing is, you're always going to be with me in spirit. And I value the friendship we had. Well, we have, you know, it's always, we hopefully we'll get together again someday, and I'll listen to your profane observations about things. I'm going to miss you, but, you know, I have great memories. I love you, man.
You know, the future is uncertain, but yeah. The future is always uncertain.
It is.
People don't realize it. The future is, nothing is promised to you.
Right.
I just have a little more certainty about the finality of things. I mean, I know that, you know, things will end sooner than I would like, but I need to be okay with how my life has gone. And I think it's, you know, there's no regrets.